This is Maria Rizaris presenting New Voices, a program which interviews brand new writers from all walks of life, deep in the throes of their writing projects. I will interview them, get them to read a sample of their work, then get a total stranger to critique them. A professional sociologist singing to Australia's most accomplished cabaret performers, that highly respected artist and actor, Paul Capsis. As if you haven't had enough head-spinning and world-altering events, here is an episode which will reverse roles in a head-spinning way. Of course, when poet and writer Roger Patolny, who is a lecturer at Wollongong University by day, pre-recorded his interview, he had no idea that he would be reciting his poetry and singing his lyrics to a professional artist of the trade. Well, Roger tried to sing. It wasn't bad, actually, but really, he wasn't exactly channeling Elton John, which of course is exactly Paul's terrain. Paul loved Roger's work and politely didn't comment on the singing and was swept up by the artful use of words and images. Roger takes us through three beautiful poems, each telling a story: isolation in COVID, being a single parent, and of course the sheer romping boy-like enthusiasm of a spaceman orbiting the earth and reciting a poem of love and longing. Paul also reflects on the time of COVID and the textured, visceral way in which Roger Patolny captures the small moments that make up this big event. Certainly big for Paul, who, as part of the arts and cultural fraternity, was deemed a non-essential worker by the government. What does this say about our society, he muses. Paul relishes all three poems, but it is the latest of Roger's creation that impresses him mightily, which is Literary Journal, Authora Australis, which uses a blind review process for selecting works submitted for publication. That way, he says, it's not who you know, nor what your reputation is, but talent and appeal of your work alone that gets credit. Now that, says Paul Capsis, is what he would like to see in the acting world. But I'm going to let these two guys just take centre stage, and I'm going to let you enjoy their performances when you're being spun around that orbital poem. Roger Patolny,
yep.
Welcome to the program. When I first started writing groups in Marrick, you had already been running writing groups, and you were an academic, and you have more recently started a magazine, and yet, really, that's not your paid job. So that level of industry and passion for writing is something that I find very exciting. But why is it that an academic in...
Sociology?
In sociology is so immersed in writing?
That's a good question. I would say that the job of a modern academic is to be a writer.
I've been a writer in other spheres as well, but it's not the same.
That's true. Very, very different. In both instances, there's a wonderful feeling when you get just the right word.
Yeah, yeah. Where's the slippage? How do you describe that transition, phantasmagoric world that, you know, you have to get into to be a writer?
The slippage is an interesting word there. You know, how do you move from one space to the next?
Yeah.
When you do social science research like I do, you become an observer and you start to notice many, many little things to find or see the pattern and sometimes the suffering that's there. And it's a narrative. And I, for one, I love description.
How long have you been writing creatively?
Oh, gee. I used to love writing little fun stories when I was a kid. Had a pretty woeful attempt at trying to write a novel for the Vogel, which rightfully disappeared into obscurity because it wasn't a very good novel at all. Really serious attempt at writing. That probably coincides with starting this community writing group. That changed a lot of stuff. What was really important about that moment was it was an internal decision to actually engage properly with writing. And it worked. It was a really nice way to sort of self-discipline myself into writing a bit more. Importantly, it connected me with other writers. I can't emphasize enough how important it is that you need other writers around to critique you, to read your stuff and give you honest feedback. And also, you just find yourself suddenly realizing you're not the only one out there taking this stuff seriously.
Yeah. And it's a lonely business.
Absolutely. That's right. And sometimes I do my best editing at like 2 in the morning, when I can't sleep. And in the dead quiet, suddenly I can see the stanzas starting to move, and I can shift words, and it just suddenly seems to work better.
You're one of the few writers I know who actually crosses over that border between poetry and short stories.
At the moment, it's probably more poetry, actually. There's a kind of a joyful freedom in poetry, particularly when on the first draft or two, where you can just release your brain to play. And I particularly love it because it's so different from the dry academic writing I do.
Well, one's tethered and the other one's untethered.
Yes, but absolutely it's more untethered, and it's an outpouring, a release of energy quite often. But it's sometimes it's just the noticing of just something small and everyday. Like I'll write a poem about my cats, but then at other times it can be very serious material about the experiences that people are going through through COVID. Yeah. A couple of poems published recently in a UK magazine, which were all on the subject of COVID and lockdown and the dealing with the tension of isolation.
Yeah, you know, I think it's what the role that artists play up in penetrating all those layers.
Absolutely.
Not just reporting on them. Well, what role does writing play in your life now?
I feel like it's just an important regular part of my life. You know, I still go to work, but the writing for me is always there, and I want to keep it sort of ticking along. I've sort of got some vague ambition about gradually winding up my academic career and transitioning into more and more and more creative writing, which I truly love. And also when I've just got more to say. Because, you know, you got to have lived a bit before you can really write.
What's your realm, the world that you're trying to translate to other people?
I love the everyday. I really like writing poems and stories about small everyday things, and particularly movement. I had a short story published in the Suburban Review called The Spitting Bridge.
I love that story.
Thank you.
It does have that just little everyday things that really are potent.
And it came from the trauma, my personal trauma, of commuting between Wollongong and Sydney for a year. And I commuted because I had to drop my daughter to school in Sydney, where her mum lived. Get her ready sometimes, you know, just as the sun's coming up. And I'm not a morning person, so that really sucked. Then drive to Sydney through the peak hour traffic. I'd be so tired and I'd drop her off. Then I'd immediately have to turn around and drive back to Wollongong. Remember walking into a theatre with 300 students 10 minutes late. And I get these looks from some of them like, you know, oh, you can't even be here on time.
Yeah, you have no idea.
You have no idea. And that's it. It's like, that's what I love, is the fact that the everyday is full of really interesting stories that most people have no idea about and they just can't see.
Lifting the lid. Mm. But you know what? I know so little about your life.
It was a wonderful thing where you finish uni and you're really not sure exactly what to do, and did that world traveling stuff. And I had the opportunity to work as a chef. Yeah, a completely unqualified chef. I call myself a cook, and every night was drinking a lot of beer and other substances.
So much
fun, but I realised that is absolutely not the life for me.
Yeah.
So I ended a PhD.
You're also a dad.
Yes.
You're a single dad, and that's obviously providing material.
That world does provide a lot of material, but I'm not sure how much of it I want to write about.
What I like about your writing, it seems to be quite immersive. So there's dialogue, there's description, there's and suddenly you're on somebody else's ride very quickly.
I have been working on a new poem, kind of stuck in COVID, even though we aren't stuck in COVID. It's still kind of hanging around, and the shadow of it hangs over everything, and it's debilitating. Increases the effort that everything takes. So
it does,
I wanted
it?
To kind of just write a little bit of a poem about some of that feeling of inertia. So this poem is called Snapback. Expertly, I slap my AM radio as it spits and crackles, while I stare at ant trails running from the fitness Bible by my window to the coffee club beneath the floorboards, where four grounded squeaks of boiling milk form a concerto with the buzzing zoom of ex-kept workers unmuting their laptops. Exhumed, I huddle by the flicker of my broken heater till I descend the meters to my barstool office, nudge pickled eggs around spelt bread and make unshaven jokes about the jagged price of housing and the recklessness of dating and the yearning for the hugging before I slouch down to an agony of meetings. Egregiously, I rub liniment onto my spine and lap the block at 5:05 past a park of somnambulant cars, empty of their blinking children, dogs and joggers, jolting the grass with exercise, before I turn my stride towards the semi-comfort of a salt-and-peppered pub. And so exhausted, I lie in bed all night, all hollow-eyed, and think of work returning an eke a scattered line across the pale screen light, and my heater sparks and flares. And I wonder, should I bother to turn it off again? That's it.
I so like that. I like it. It mixes your senses up. To what degree, when you're writing something like that, is it pure effusion of feeling? And how much of it is sitting down saying, I'm going to write a poem about COVID?
It's more the former.
I believe that entirely. The thrust of that poem, you can almost feel it. Yeah. Like you sat and just went, blah.
Yeah, that's it. It's a sort of, it's a sensational, not sensational, it's a poem of the senses.
Of the senses, yes, yeah. It is sensational too, obviously.
Not much is happening in it. I mean, the poor dude's just sitting around being really tired.
But that's just it. All those words you used were so active. You used a lot of quite big words. You're stimulating the listener and the reader go, no, I'm challenging you to come in, think about this. But in fact, you're talking about some very small movements.
Yeah, big words for small movements. nice one. Like this was coming from the excessive amount of time I spend in cafes. Because like it's all online teaching at work.
Yeah.
Which means I'm spending way too much time in my house.
So you go to a cafe.
I've got to get out of my house, so I go to cafes or the library. When you're in cafes a lot, you get used to just seeing the same faces, the same look. So many people also on their lap. Yeah.
Another one.
This one just got accepted place in the US. I wrote a poem about a friend of mine who is a nurse. I wanted to celebrate what she does, but also peel back the layers a bit to show the experience. So this one is called Ambulant in Twilight. Everything is blue-black. She starts late from a nap, scattering bank statements. Jack jumps across the covers till she smacks him with a pillow towards his basket for his dirty PJ top and a mask of royal blue while his father beeps his Tucson in the driveway. The sky is a magenta smear. She runs the steel blue bus down, now hollow as a broken shoe, and gasping, texts a joke to Jack about a bus all stuffed with painted toes as she sits among the statues, distant masks of colour, stiff against the racing cobalt of the clouds, ambulant in twilight. She ties her hair beside the sliding door between a raft of tests, temperature, symptoms, hotspot lists. She drinks her herbs and sticks her COVID-coloured dot spot to the cornflower of her dress, and gasps and laughs to the flicker of fluorescent tea room lights about the empty pallets, bare of masks and sanitizer, and worries with her colleagues if there'll be enough for after. She does the dance of donning, body bound in sterile gown and plastic covers for her shoes, a wimple of a balaclava, goggles, mask, and face shield last, but for the double gloves, and walks the sober, foggy path along the designated blue line. Freshly unwrapped forceps lie sweatless on the tray of basic instruments tonight. She passes a retractor, worries Jack is not in bed, and dreams of holidays, colour books and cigarettes, till the diathermy smoke from the cauterized flesh produces aerosol and risk. She sighs and dons again, disposing of the Rampleys stained with umber antiseptic. His dad calls with the bad news. He can't do next week after all, away. So she pleads again to change her shifts, and then puts the needle holders down, exits to her favourite band to get a can of cocktail from the cafe, then texts Jack to say, good morning, don't be late for school, and shuts her eyes to feel the sun.
That's really lovely. That's more like a story. There's a lot of description outside of her, sort of describing her world.
Yeah.
And then there's that kind of little slice out of the everyday, just into the sky. What's the difference when you're getting under somebody else's skin and feel inspired by what they're seeing in the world?
Honestly, don't think I could get under many people's skin. So I guess I try to write to what I know.
That's lying. So lying. Because in fact, you got under that person's skin. I'm sure if you read that, she would go, yeah, that's how it feels like.
Well, she did. But my point was that I talked with her quite a lot to get that sense of it.
I don't know. Is it a male thing? Because I think a woman would say, well, I kind of channeled that.
I've written a couple of poems about single parenthood. They've both been from the point of view of a single mum. I'm okay to write about that because I've been a single dad for a long time, to the point where I feel like I have some indication of what it's like for a single mum. And I only say some, but I also interact with a lot of single mums, and I feel immense sympathy and care. I really like and want to tell their stories.
Mm. Was it the guy in About a Boy who attends single mums groups so he can meet...
Hugh Grant's character. Yeah. What was it? What was the groups he attended? Was it called Single Parents Alone Together SPAC? That's right.
Anyway, you don't have to answer that question.
Parallel. I think unlike him, I actually do have a kid. That's right.
But in the beginning when I was talking about you being a parent and you said it must provide you with material, you go, nothing I'm ready to share yet.
Some of it. I sometimes feel like if you go into something before you're ready and it's too raw, it's actually not authentic.
Yeah.
It's actually jagged. The most authentic expression for me balances really tapping into how you actually feel, but presenting it in a way which is accessible to others.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about why you started Author Australis magazine?
The format that we have is blind review. It means that when people send their written works to us, we give them a little ID code and then they fill out their details of who they are separately. So then we get their stories and we don't know who sent them. And then we, the editorial team, go through all the stories, all the poems and artwork, and we review it, we assess it, and we give scores. Then we go see who actually wrote them. So that means we were surprised when we rejected a few people who we realized actually were quite well-known people on the poetry circuit. There was one or two, and we went, But we stuck to our guns. The whole point of this is a best quality material, not the name of the person who submitted it. We began as a community group of writers and poets, right? And we were just everyday people coming in off the street. We didn't know about how to get published or anything, right? Mm. We started talking to each other and going, do you know how to get published? No. Do you? No. And the more we looked into it, the more we sort of realized that a lot of the professional poets and writers out there have been doing this stuff a long time, and they move in particular groups. And they are sometimes very tight-knit, difficult space to break into.
Yeah, yeah.
Between us had many experiences of trying to get stuff published and having no luck.
Mm.
'Cause I might add that there's a lot more opportunities to get published in other countries. But in Australia, there's actually very few. And it means that there's not many spaces for just amateur writers to try and have a shot.
Creativity and amazing writing going on outside of that circle.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah. And also the main publishing outlets in Australia now have... I feel like it excludes a lot of everyday writers. So again, it's to try and give that space for people.
Yeah, fantastic.
To have that sort of grassroots voice.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
Okay. So this is a quirky, slightly nonsensical poem, and it's a bit difficult to read because I've turned it into what's called concrete poetry.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'll show you what it looks like. Can you see it?
Ooh, it's an orb.
It's an orb. Yeah, it's called Orbit. Okay. Oh, God. I was really inspired when Tesla launched a car into space.
Yes.
So, you know, there's this like Tesla Roadster, this electric car, and it's now in orbit around the planet. It's got like a astronaut sitting in it, waving or something.
That is so boy. Go on.
It is so weird, right? Anyway, and I got inspired by that and the idea of distance and isolation.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought I'd write like a kind of a love song based on that. So, so here goes. As I read this, I'm going to have to rotate my computer physically. Orbit. If they can put a car in space, then why can't I reach you? I circle and fly across your sky, but you watch me pass and wave goodbye. You can imagine me singing this?
Yes.
They could put a car in space. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Just read.
Shut up, read. I'm everything you want on paper. Cherry red, no particle dents. I'm fast and stylish, low on mileage, but you're just looking at the text he sent. I'm spinning wheels in zero G while the other guy has gravity. And I know that there's attraction, but there's just no traction. So I'm smiling in my pressurized suit with my hand out to lift you higher. But you frown because you only see your own reflection in my visor. And you're flying past, not near enough. And I'm breaking orbit, losing stuff. Fraying, flying, disintegrating, driving high, sick of waiting. And soon the tourists will come to space. They'll pay a fortune to be free, but instead of stars, they'll see a broken car and an empty seat right next to me.
Oh, great. That is actually really, really good. I like that.
Thanks.
And I like the idea that you were twisting it. Roger, it's been wonderful interviewing you. Thank you.
And, you know, invite the listeners to please have a look at Authora Australis, the journal. You can find it at authora.net. The theme of issue two is red. So send us poetry, stories, artwork on the theme of red. Have fun. You've got till October 25. So authora.net and send it in.
And now on to the critique part of our program with the very enjoyable Paul Capsis. Okay, Paul, first of all, welcome to the program.
Oh, Maria.
Here we are. We're here late at night the studio. And I saw you taking notes assiduously. You had your glasses on.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Well, how marvelous to hear that interview. Thank you very much. That was engaging.
It's about loving your art and your craft, which you must understand because you've been doing the same craft for how long?
Yeah. 37 years.
Wow.
Yes, I relate to that. So many interesting things Roger talked about in terms of how the process of the writing, and it's almost like he's describing an actor's process and how to create a character.
I find that there's a lot of correlation between being an actor and interpreting the word and being a writer and interpreting the word. Channeling characters.
I like channeling.
Yes.
Yeah. And I that's saw a word
you,
I like.
Yeah. I saw you look up when you said that. And Roger said, oh, I can't really get under somebody's skin. And yet he did it.
Yes, he did. Absolutely. With the nurse. I was there. I was in that hospital.
Yes.
I could smell the corridor. I could see her. That's the power of great writing.
Yeah.
I think he's got such a clear, calm, the crystal clear voice and description.
Yeah.
I mean, he talks about it being visceral and being very much writing about the lived experience. It's the little things, but they're the things that create the picture. I would never regard myself a writer, but I did write a play with an academic, with Julian Merrick, writing Angela's Kitchen. He was adamant that the play would be in my voice and not be theatrical. Because, you know, also my background is cabaret, and because I spoke it and then Julian did a massive transcript.
Yeah.
I mean, I found it very interesting what Roger said about the things he didn't feel comfortable writing about, in particular his daughter.
Yeah.
When he mentioned that, I completely took it back to my experience of Angela's Kitchen.
You had trepidation in doing it?
Absolutely. I totally got what he meant because there is that resistance to that expression, that level. As a writer, even as a poet, that you're not willing to delve. Now, I thought it was interesting when Roger talked about his poem Orbit, it being a song, and I could really hear it, and it made me think of David Bowie and Elton John. I thought,
this Rocket Man.
Rocket Man, all about space and hanging out there in the orbs.
You know what? He started off being the sociologist. I will tell you, listener, I had to cut out all the sociology stuff that he talked about. And all of a sudden, as the interview progressed, he became more like, this me, the writer. I'm proud now to say I'm a writer. And then joyfully writing poetry that rhymes about a car that's in space.
I think it's a wonderful thing. I thought about him as being a man who has access to his gentle feminine side. And he did talk about, as a single parent, writing about the feminine point of view. In the 21st century, when it seems like the world is spiraling into Neanderthal, it's, for me, it's a breath of fresh air, and it's something I feel is precious.
Yeah. So
this is a rare thing with a heterosexual man. Yeah. I find that it's a rarity. As an academic as well. I mean, there was a mention earlier about words.
Yes.
There was a mention of big words. Yeah. See, when he did Snapback. Yeah.
Snapback was great.
Oh, I was there. That description, it was alive, it was clear, thinking about those big words and small moves. See, I don't have access to big words.
Yeah.
I'm not an academic. I never went to university. I understood it, Maria.
Yes.
That, for me, it was a big thing in terms of hearing an academic write poetry in terms of access. And he mentioned that as well. Sorry.
Go.
I'm jumping all over the place.
No, it's good because we're two Greeks. In,
I know, right? We're both, you can't see it, people, but we're waving our arms around. Going back to the magazine and his process of selection.
Yes.
And the merit, not on the names, but on the actual work. That's what they really need to do with actors.
Yeah.
A lot of the same people get a lot of the work and reminds you that the industry in Australia is small, but make it about the people's ability rather than the name. And there's always a certain type of person that makes those choices.
Yeah, in the big publishing industry.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It is exactly the same in the film, in the television, and in the theatre world. And I've been incredibly fortunate
yeah.
that I've met creative others that make work, incredibly broad view and selection and how they cast. And
yeah.
I've been really fortunate for 37 years. I've had, you're by luck,
very talented.
Access to those people. Yes, but you can have talent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maria,
yeah.
And if you don't find your people, I won't say tribe, but also as a performer, I'm also very acutely aware of the people that I will never work with. They will never work with me.
Yeah.
I don't fit their vibe, you know?
Well, so you can understand when he says that it's such a small world.
Give space to grassroots access. Yeah. And that for me really rings a bell.
Yeah. What's a sweet moment on stage for you when, like, you're actually exercising your craft?
I've never been asked that question before. Good question. I guess for me, it's when I don't know who I'm out of my body.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I'm out of my body.
When you're channeling that character.
Yeah. And it is channeling.
You've forgotten.
And that's the perfect word, channeling.
Yeah.
It's that thing of you as the character. You're in the world. You're not even conscious so much of the audience. You can feel them. You can hear them. It's like Roger's poem, Ambulant in Twilight. It's the description and that place. You're there. You're not outside of it.
Yeah. On this program, we always talk about this, that moment when you lose yourself in the writing.
That's the being in the moment that we all strive for as actors.
Yes.
Well, an actor does. A performer does. Well, the channeling thing for me resonates because of the cabaret work that I've done where I've been known people.
Yeah.
And people I've picked, people that I've admired, people like Judy Garland or Marlene Dietrich or Janis Joplin, or that moment when you are gone, it's getting lost in words.
In the words, yeah.
The words, the idea, the melody.
Power. Else. They have a power. Now, with Roger's work, what I feel is that he doesn't even know that he's doing it. And he cracks through. Like, he's got this whole veneer. He surprised me, I have to say, because I thought, white privileged male. nice Canberra background, grew up in fields.
He did, that was something that really struck me was he said, with time, when you've lived.
Yes, that's right. He said, to keep writing, I need to live more.
I think that's true.
And it's kind of moving. Like, I haven't found Orbit moving, that it was a boy and he's trying to impress a girl, kind of a yearning there.
I thought it was like a love letter. But he said it was, you know, distance in isolation. But to me, it was very love. Personal.
Yeah. Yes.
More love than the black hole.
Yeah. I could see you also really related to the whole COVID thing. Actors especially have been affected by COVID.
Yes, exactly. We're living this. And for me, the writing of what we're living is incredibly important.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because of the way, like Roger does with his writing, it's you get in deep. It's not surface stuff.
Yes.
And it's not flip. But creative people in the performing arts, we're having a pretty bad time. The idea of us being non-essential was a really difficult one to swallow.
Yeah.
And I do not agree with that. Art, culture is vital. Yeah.
Any final words about Roger? Because we could talk all night. We are completely capable of doing that.
I just really enjoyed him. I mean, I said this earlier. He's an academic and he's got access to something about himself that's creative, which I think is a marvellous, wonderful, important thing.
And he's also created a vehicle for other writers who are.
The magazine, yeah.
Paul Capsis, it was wonderful having you on the program. Thank you so much for contributing and, you know, adding us to the end of your very busy day.
Thank you, Maria. I've enjoyed it.
This is Maria Rosaris, and it was a pleasure to bring you this program, produced in the Sydney studios of 2RPH with the support and inspiration of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. I look forward to your company next time.